Today I'm at Chepstow Racecourse with Paul Ferguson. Thanks very much for agreeing to talk to us today, Paul. Now, you're on the 13th edition of your book, Jumpers to Follow. What initially gave you the spark and made you decide that this type of book was something that is needed and would sell?
Whether it was needed or not, there was plenty out there at the time. But it was something, just a kid growing up, being a racing fan, it was something that I always enjoyed reading myself, especially this. We're talking now the start of the season, this time of year when the jump season is really getting going. I'm more national hunt based myself, and it was something that I always enjoyed reading, and I always thought that I had the capabilities of putting something together, so that's how it came about, really.
And is there anything in yours that the previous ones didn't do that you thought you could have improved on?
I've changed it over the years, certainly. If you're looking at how it started 13 years ago, even before that, I actually wrote a paperback national hunt guy, they called it, and I sold it here actually, Chepstow, at this meeting. That was the very first dip of my toe in the water, as it were. But it has progressed massively, and more so in the past 4 years since Weatherby's involvement. Just the actual, if you're looking at the product now, from in terms of, I think mine's a lot potentially easier on the eye than some of them, the way it's laid out, almost my 40 horses in almost like a race card format with the colours and silks.
So how much work goes into it, and how much travelling do you have to do? Do you go to the yards?
Not necessarily always for the yards. That's a bit of a misconception. A lot of people think the around the yard section of the book is stable tours, which it isn't. It's my personal view of, well, I think there's 59 yards in there this year. But most of that's done by phone and email. But I tend to do a lot more travelling around during the year, during the season itself when the racing's on. I have just come from John Joe's yard this morning. I like to see them once they're in the work and things, but I'll keep in contact with them. There's a lot of to-ing and fro-ing between the trainers, but a lot of them nowadays are great communication-wise. They're really happy, I say, especially some of the younger trainers, like the fact that their horses are flagged up and things. It's a lot more promotion for them.
Okay, so before we talk more about the book, which we will do later on, what sparked your interest in racing in the first place?
I suppose it's probably a similar story to many, really. It's a bit of a family tradition. My dad's a racing fan, not so much. He's probably more so now since I've got involved in it more. But it was my granddad, really. As I like growing up, I'm a big Everton fan. If I wasn't at the match on a Saturday, I was sat with my granddad watching the racing, and it went from there, really. I was hooked on it. First time I remember going to Aintree for the Grand National meeting, obviously being a local. On the Thursday, and even back in them days, it wasn't nowhere near on the scale it is now, that meeting, but I was hooked pretty much from the word go.
And were you hooked on the racing or the betting originally?
No, both, but the racing, yeah, I just enjoyed watching it. Obviously, even as a kid, I had a small interest bet, but I just loved the sport, to be honest.
Now, I understand you left school at 16. There's quite a few people who leave school at 16, but basically blatant non-triers. So, you know, why did you leave school at 16, or did you go straight into racing?
No, I didn't go straight into racing. I just basically couldn't wait to get out of there, for the truth be told, which I wouldn't tell my 7-year-old son now. I'll gloss over that when he's ready for advice of whether he should stay on and things. At the time, I just had enough, to be honest, of school, and I didn't really want to go in. Got the opportunity to work in an office in Liverpool city centre, and which I did for several years, so I was quick to leave.
And what was that doing?
I was within a pensions company, started off working in pensions, worked my way up, and I was working with it at the time I left, which I was still doing that part time until a couple of years ago. At the time I left, I was working with the actuaries, so basically facts and figures.
So you've always been interested in that, sort of worked itself across to racing. Have you been doing that in tandem?
Yeah, I suppose you would say that. Yeah, maths has always been something I've been interested in, and the job I was doing was statistics based as well, so you could say that. Although I did spend most of my time on my phone looking at entries and things and not doing what I should have been doing.
So what was your first foray into actually producing stuff for racing?
The very first piece that I had published was in the Haydock Park race card. I think it was May 2004. I'd done an interview with Martin Dwyer. And how that came about was I got talking to Charlie McCann, who has been in various roles over the years, latterly at Bet Victor over in Gibraltar. At the time, he was working for Littlewoods Bet Direct, who were based in Liverpool. I met Charlie at the Cheltenham Festival preview evening at Haydock. Got talking and with himself, and he introduced me to Russ Wiseman, who then took over from him. The pair of them sort of took me under the wing, more so Charlie at the time, and he took me racing a few times. Then they had me up as a guest speaker in boxes and things, and he knew someone at the race course, and he thought it'd be a good thing to have a local writer writing about local features. So that was how Martin Dwyer came about, as being my first interviewee.
Okay, so you've gone from being a man of figures to a man of letters. Why did you suddenly decide to go into writing?
It was the book that I always wanted to do. I always wanted to write. And once I started, when Charlie's first advice was just get something published. And there was a magazine at the time as well called Pacemaker.
That's a breeding magazine.
Yeah, breeding magazine, yeah. I wrote a piece for them. And then I wrote that one piece for Haydock, which then become a regular feature with basing it around local either jockeys, or it wasn't even so much jockeys, sometimes it was horses and things. And one thing and another, I wrote for Haydock about 18 months, I think, for every meeting, even on the flat season, which was a good starting point. And then as you well know, we know each other through Racing Ahead, who haven't both written for them for many years now. And as that came about, just as that was being launched, I got in touch with them and said I was starting out. This was the kind of road I wanted to go down. I had a meeting with the guy who happened to be from Liverpool. I think he took a shine to me and gave me a chance, and then there you go.
And you're still writing for Racing Ahead now?
Yeah, I am, yeah.
So, talking about the book again, how do you go about compiling a book like this? I mean, there's all the thousands of horses that you've got in training. How do you get it down to the few that you come up with?
Well, the book comprises of various different sections. As I say, that the around the yard section is my opinion, so they're all my horses as well. But to get it down to the 40 leading prospects, which is the main, I'd say that was the main focal point of the book, the first main chunk section. It's a case of process of elimination, really. I'll have a list. I'll start compiling a list now throughout this season for next year. And it's mainly bumper horses coming through. Or I think this year of the 40, I think 23 of them were from bumpers last year, and they'll now be graduating over hurdles for the first time. It's that kind of thing. That's what it's focused on, more the young up and coming horses that have got the future ahead of them. But in terms of actually whittling it down, let's say it is a process of elimination, and then even at some point I might end up thinking I've got 10 staying novice chasers, so I don't really want that, because I'll always try and keep track of the level stakes profit of the selection. So you don't really want the horses clashing with each other in the same division, if at all possible.
Okay, so is that part of the attraction for National Hunt Racing, that these horses are going to be around for several years, so you can follow their careers?
Yeah, certainly, definitely. And that's one thing I'd say to people who buy the book. It's not just really, so with most of my horses being young horses, it's not really just for this season, because they'll go on and beyond. There'll be horses I've touched upon, which you might go and win one or two novice hurdles this year, but they might flourish in a year or two's time when they go over the fences.
And you sometimes get the suspicion that there's a trainer keeping one under wraps that they're not going to tell you about. You try and prize them out of them.
Yeah, well, I try. That's why I don't do too many interviews while I'm writing it. To be honest, I do try and keep the opinion to my own. I do like them to be more my what I've seen from my own eyes, rather than opinion of other people. So that's another one of the reasons why I try and do me visiting afterwards. And I will speak to the trainers, obviously, to check horses' well-being and things, and the back in training, this, that and the other, before we go to publication. But it is that is one of the reasons why I do try and keep it to my own opinion. And I will say that to anyone starting to get in the game. Everyone asks for a bit of advice and things. The thing you should do more than anything is watch as many races as you can and trust your own eye rather than what people tell you.
So we talked in the first part a bit about the book. Just to touch on it again, it's now published by Weatherby's a few years ago now. Yeah. Did that increase the profile and the circulation dramatically?
Yeah, definitely. Well, things like today, we're sat here at Chepstow today, and I've got a race name sponsored in the name of the book, which it's been happening for the past 3-4 years now since Weatherby's introduced, but it's something that I could never have afforded to push myself. So from the promotional point of view, again, as I said, just the visual impression you get when you pick the book up now, it looks a whole lot better, and that is since Weatherby's involvement, yeah.
And that, would you say that the book is aimed at punters or just generally people that really enjoy National Hunt racing?
Either and both, I would hope, to be honest. I hope there's enough in there to keep your racing fan entertained. But at the end of the day, a lot of people buy these books because they want to back winners, really. So that is that's what it comes down to at the end. Yeah, I would hope that people think it's value for money, the amount of information, the amount of time I've put in to write it. But at the end of the day, people who are reading it, the majority of them have a bet and want to back a few winners.
So how much time and effort would you put into your own personal betting?
I've watched these videos you've done with people who are professional punters. I'd be on nowhere near that scale. I wouldn't even profess to be on that kind of level. I'm quite selective, to be honest. I follow, as the way you can probably tell the way the book is, I like to back novices, young horses that haven't really fulfilled the potential, rather than the seasoned handicap chasers. Maybe later in the campaign, I like moving on. I like novices going into handicap companies, an angle that I use a lot. Even going into the festivals that now. And obviously last year I started writing the Cheltenham Festival betting guide, so and there's a lot of that in there. Even if going back a few years when Paul Jones used to write it, a couple of times I contributed to that, and one year was, could you give one piece of advice for the festival? And it's not just for the festival, I'd say it's for the season in general, and probably Christmas and beyond. Then start looking at novices who've just had three or four runs once they go into handicap company and beyond.
Now, you were telling me your early days of betting, you had a success, but on the flat.
Yeah. Back when Frankie had his seven timer, was it? Was it September 96, was it? I was 16 at the time, and it's quite a funny story when you get to the end of it. We were in the pub before the match. I wasn't drinking, obviously. We'd be in the pub every week, and some of my dad's friends, some of them would be racing fans, but they wouldn't necessarily be punters. But I was quite keen on studying the form at the time. And on of a Saturday, if there was racing on, if it was like during the winter when the racing was on before the match, they'd ask me to pick a horse out and he'd have a bet on it or something. We were sat there this day in September, and we were playing pool, and I actually said, Frankie could go through the card here. And my dad put a bet on a Yankee on for me. I had won a few hundred quid, nothing like out of the ordinary or anything, but as a 16-year-old I was pretty happy. Straight after the match, we went home in the car, didn't go at the time, there was no mobile phones or anything. As we pulled up outside the house, my mum's waiting on the step. So the lads had got back to the pub and seen Dettori had the seven winners on the telly and thought I'd won hundreds of thousands, and had been on the phone to my mum, so I think my mum was expecting me and my dad to turn up with a sack full of money, with a couple of hundred quid in the pocket instead.
So that's not a bad start with your tank there. So what the how long have you actually been in racing to earn your living?
Full time. I was working for Racing Ahead, you were talking like 13 years now, but I was still working part time in my office job for the past 10 years or so. And then Weatherby's approached me about. They were at the time, Andrew Carter was the commercial director. He contacted me and said he was a fan of Jumpers to Follow. Could we have a meeting about them taking over it? Which they did. I'd say that was 4 years ago now. And ever since then, I've been increasing my workload for them. And then the past couple of years, I've ended up packing in work, and I've gone working for Weatherby's now. So, which they wanted to bring the production of the Cheltenham Festival Betting Guide in house. I'd written the Aintree and Punchestown Guide for them 2 years ago. So that was part of the getting me on board, was to start writing the Cheltenham Festival Betting Guide. And then now I contribute to race cards and things for them and things with them.
Okay, now we try not to date these interviews too much, but what horses are you most excited about this season?
For this season, I would say one I'm looking forward to, probably a bit darker than many would nominate, would be Manila Bobo, trained by Rebecca Curtis. She's got another chaser running here today called Liz Nagar-Oscar, who'd probably be the obvious choice for many. But Manila Bobo, he was an Irish point-to-point winner, which is a field I like to delve into as well. And then he ran three times before he got off the mark over hurdles, winning a Stratford at the end of the season over 2.6 miles. But before that, he travelled well in a decent race here. The horse he actually beat in his point to point, I won't try and pronounce his name, trained by Fergal O'Brien, is 132 rated now. And there wasn't much between them in the Chepstow maiden hurdle. He went on to win a couple of handicaps. Manella Bobo went to Stratford and won his maiden hurdle over 2.6 miles. And off 126, I'd be disappointed if he couldn't win a couple of novice handicap chases before the handicapper catches up with him. He'd be one. Probably a more familiar name, say, talking on bumper horses coming through. Chantry House and Nicky Henderson's again, point to point winner, the second time of asking. He won a bumper at Warwick on his debut in the colours of JP McManus, well supported, and he'd actually been declared him as a non-runner the previous two Saturdays, which strongly suggested that Nicky Henderson thinks he's pretty smart and he wouldn't risk him until the ground was right. I think that bumper was quite good actually, that he won, and I'd expect him to develop into a smart novice hurdler this year.
Okay, you take part in a lot of Cheltenham previews and that sort of thing. Are you still allowed to take part in 10 to follow competitions?
Yeah, I do. I get involved with a couple with friends. Obviously, the big one that was around the country doesn't go anymore, so I don't know whether I would be allowed to go into that if it was still going, if it was still run by the Tote nowadays, I'm not sure.
And what other work do you do in racing now?
As I say, obviously, I'm contracted to Weatherby, so a lot of my time is, I'm already working now on the Cheltenham Guide, the statistics and things, but I contribute to the race cards for Weatherby. Elsewhere, I was the BBC Radio Merseyside racing correspondent for a couple of years until the racing slot was lost for rugby league. I write for Racing Ahead, as you know, we spoke about it. I have a daily column for betrescue.com, which is, it's not really a detailed column, that's just a couple of either selection or two for each day, and that's throughout the season.
Okay, what would you be looking at achieving in the next sort of 5 years? Have you got any unattained goals that you're sort of looking at?
I'm as things stand, I'm happy where I am at the minute, because this is where I wanted to get to with the way the book is at the minute. But looking beyond that, yeah, there's a couple of things to say. Going to stables is one of the things I really like, and maybe getting involved. I do a lot of race plan. I do it for myself for the book. As you say about how putting things together, I actually try and map races out for horses, and if one of the horses ends up in a race where I've thought that's when I'll probably have a stronger bet maybe than other times and things, and that kind of thing I like too, and I wouldn't mind getting into, I've been to the sales a few times along the lines with the buying and things, but I'd say I think they're probably a few years off yet.
So you're going to be a prolific owner.
I've had shares in horses. That was one of the reasons I started, really. My dad and myself had shares in a couple in a syndicate with Nicky Henderson going back a few years. And Charlie Lonson, actually, when he wrote the foreword for my book a couple of years ago, he said he thought I only paid the fees just so I could get into Henderson's yard and get the information on all the good horses. That was at the time when the likes of Oscar Whiskey and Sprinter Sacro, Finian's Rainbow were coming through the bumper ranks. So it was a good time to be involved in the yard.
And yes, so you've got Cornelius Lysitz, the introduction in this one.
Yeah, he's penned it this year, another Evertonian. But yeah, you very articulate.
Anyway, so any football fans can buy the book, look out there. So
yeah. No affiliation
with Brilliant. Well, Paul Ferguson, thank you very much.
No problem, my pleasure.
Thank you.
Look out for our regular money-back offers, including Pipped at the Post on selected horse racing and Saved by the 90s for all Premier League and televised championship matches. BeGambleAware.org. Over 18 only.